This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM by mobile app and on the web at kexp.org. My guest this morning is Ellen Brown, an attorney and founder and chair of the Public Banking Institute. Ellen is author of 12 books, including Web of Debt and the Public Bank Solution, and has written over 200 articles. Ellen Brown is here to tell us about the current status of efforts to create public banks in the U.S. Welcome, Ellen.
Thanks, Diane. Great to talk to you.
Would you remind us, what is a public bank?
A public bank is a bank owned by the people, actually owned by the government, in other words. It could be a national bank. It could be, well, that would be central banks, although our own central bank has 12 branches, all of which are privately owned by the banks in their district. But in most countries, the central bank is technically owned by the government. But what we're talking about in the Public Banking Institute and our public banking movement in general is state-owned banks or city or county-owned banks. And we have a pretty strong movement going right now for all of those.
Before we focus on U.S. public banking efforts, how widespread are public banks worldwide?
Globally, 25% of banks are publicly owned. Actually, it used to be as much as 50%, I think, in the 60s. It was 40% in the 90s, and then there was this big push for liberalization and privatization. And so now we're down to 25%. But it would include, if you're looking at it globally, the world's largest banks are actually publicly owned. So that would be in China. I think the two largest banks are in China. The Japanese Postal Bank is the largest depository bank in the world, and it's majority publicly owned.
Would you elaborate on the advantages of a public bank?
For a state-owned public bank, we have one, which is the Bank of North Dakota. So you could have different models for a public bank, but what we would advocate for the U.S., for U.S. states, would be to follow the Bank of North Dakota model more or less. So by law, all of the deposits of the state are deposited in the Bank of North Dakota, and then it leverages that money or leverages its capital and uses that money to do public work for the state itself. So basically, it's a matter of keeping our funds local for our own use. So first of all, the bank itself is highly profitable. It has very low costs relative to other banks. Doesn't pay bonuses, fees, or commissions. Doesn't advertise. It doesn't actually have branches. Well, it has one branch. It actually has two buildings in North Dakota. But anyway, you don't need branches. It could all actually be done online. So basically, it's a very cost-effective way to keep our money local, use it for our own purposes, leverage it for our own purposes. Right now, our money goes to Wall Street. I mean, the state's money or the city's money. I live in Los Angeles, so it's a huge city. But our money goes into Wall Street banks at a very low interest that they pay on the deposits. And then the Wall Street banks use that money for their own purposes, which may be abroad or maybe things we don't approve of. Actually, what has caused the public banking movement to pick up lately are two things. One is the marijuana movement, the fact that more than half the states now have legalized marijuana and they don't have any place to put their money. So there's a push to form a public bank of some sort that could take the marijuana money. But the other big push has come from this disaffection with the big Wall Street banks, and particularly Wells Fargo, probably started with the Occupy movement. So many cities have now divested from Wells Fargo, pulled their money out of Wells Fargo, including Los Angeles. So then the question is, if you pull your money out of Wells Fargo, where do you put it? In another Wall Street bank, which has been found guilty of as many or more offenses than Wells Fargo. So you can't really put it in a local bank because they're not big enough to handle a city's funds, which are massive. So the obvious solution is to form your own bank. And so that's why there's sort of this partnership now between the divestment movement and the public bank movement.
Let's focus in now on the efforts to establish new public banks at the state level. How far along are those efforts?
The first public state bank legislation was filed in 2010 by Bob Hasegawa in Washington State, where you are. And that motion didn't pass. So we've had well over 30 bills for public banks, which haven't yet passed. But currently there are 15 pieces of active legislation that have been filed and are moving through the process. And then we have maybe three dozen movements across the country pushing for bills. Probably the first to get there might be New Jersey, because the governor of New Jersey, Phil Murphy, ran on a public bank, state bank platform, and he was just elected. And so in January, 2 weeks after he was inaugurated, there was already a bill filed for a state-owned bank, and they're moving forward with that. So because they've got the governor behind it, that's a big plus. So they're liable to get there. But California is, actually, I should say Washington State. In fact, Washington State might actually get there first. They have now added $500,000 into the budget to produce a business plan for a public depository bank. And I think this is also largely due to Bob Hasegawa's work, Washington State Senator. The city of Seattle also has allocated $100,000 for a feasibility study for a city-owned bank. And in Washington, D.C., I think $200,000 was allocated for a feasibility study. We have a number of feasibility studies going on. John Chung, the treasurer in California, has called for a feasibility study for a state-owned bank. In Los Angeles, the city council is proceeding with a study of the feasibility of a city-owned bank. In Alaska, there's an active bill going. In Michigan State, a bill has been filed recently by its bipartisan. It was filed by Democrats and Republicans. Oh, in Massachusetts, there's a bill for a state infrastructure bank. And in California, our lead candidate for governor is Gavin Newsom, and he is endorsing a state-owned bank. And the winner for treasurer will be Fiona Ma, because she doesn't have an opponent. She also supports a state-owned bank. Gail McLaughlin, who's running for lieutenant governor, endorses the state bank idea. So California might also, it would be one of those three states probably first, New Jersey, Washington State, or California.
I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Ellen Brown, founder and chair of the Public Banking Institute. Our topic is the status of efforts to form public banks in the U.S., and you are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on listener-powered KEXP, 90.3 FM by mobile app, and on the web at kexp.org. Well, you've already alluded a bit to this, but where do efforts stand to create public banks at the city level overall?
Probably in California, we have the strongest movement going. There's a push for a city-owned bank in Los Angeles. The city is actually actively pursuing it. But the one block that any city-owned bank comes up against, or actually any public bank, is that we don't really have a category for public banks. We need a special charter. Private banks are required to get FDIC insurance, for example. Well, if you're a state-owned bank on the model of the Bank of North Dakota, you're not really taking individual deposits. Your big depositor is the state itself, and it has far more than $250,000, so it really makes no sense to have to get FDIC insurance. Plus, you're putting yourself under the jurisdiction of the FDIC, which is pretty much controlled by the big Wall Street banks. You know, they're the big contributors to FDIC. So there's a movement in California to form an alliance, or there actually is an alliance that has been formed. So it's for the Public Bank LA people, the Santa Rosa, Oakland, San Francisco, Santa Barbara. They have formed an alliance to try to get a special charter passed that would be specific to public banks, unique to public banks and their requirements. So that would be very helpful. But they're all very actively engaged. We have a really active movement here in Los Angeles, which is great. It's sort of an extension of the Occupy movement, but it's very active young people who really want to see change, and they can see this as a way forward, something that we can all get behind and we can all do, and it's not really that controversial. I mean, it's not really a left issue or a right issue. It's just good for the local community.
What additional cities outside of California are moving forward toward public banking?
Well, there's Seattle and Washington, D.C. I think there's a movement in St. Louis, Philadelphia.
Are there any tribal nations considering public banks?
Well, we've definitely heard talk of that. You know, they've definitely considered it. We don't have any specific legislation for that, but it would be a good idea since they have their own sort of jurisdiction. They can pretty much do what they want, and they could definitely pull their own money out of big banks and form their own and leverage it for their own purposes.
Well, you've already alluded to this, but what is the driving force behind the efforts for public banks in the U.S.?
Well, I think what's really driven it was the 2008 collapse and the disillusion with the big banks. Before that, Alan Greenspan had this mystical aura of you just figured the big banks knew what they were doing or the central bank knew what it was doing and you left it to the bankers. But then when everything collapsed and people started looking behind the curtain, which is what my book Web of Debt is about, Wizard of Oz analogy, then we could see that they were corrupt, that they were sort of a parasite that was bleeding us of our money, not using it wisely, not using it for our purposes. So there have been movements ever since, people looking for alternatives. How do we get out of this? Can we form our own banks? How could we do that? There's also, you know, a big cryptocurrency movement, which also is motivated by the desire to escape the big banks, but they're also motivated by the desire to escape big government. It's sort of a right-wing libertarian gold bug sort of thing to do. It's like a digital form of gold. So you can feel this impulse sort of globally. There's just a sense of revolution right now that government is not acting on our behalf, and definitely the big banks are not acting on our behalf, and we need to do this ourselves.
Are there additional drivers for the efforts to have public banks?
Well, as I said, there's the marijuana issue. That's a big driver for the politicians themselves. For example, John Chung is our state treasurer. He's been looking into that for the last year. He's had a committee that's been investigating the feasibility of a state-owned bank to take marijuana deposits because they're anticipating, it was a $7 billion business, but I think they're now anticipating an even bigger business than that, which would be $1 billion worth of taxes annually, which is a lot. You know, so that's a big motivator right there. But then there's the crime element. You've got all these businesses that are storing money in their basements, and it's very difficult conducting business in cash. So that's a statewide interest. And then the divest movement, as I said.
What are the key challenges to overcome in establishing public banks at this time?
Well, I think the challenge number one is people don't really know what we're talking about. So legislators will say, well, we don't have the money to lend. We need our money for our budget. But they're not understanding how banking works. Banks don't actually lend their deposits. They create deposits when they make loans. That's something I've written about extensively. And you almost have to read about it, you know, to get it. It's hard to explain on a radio show. You almost have to read about it and see how they do it. They do it by double entry bookkeeping. Anyway, you're not lending your deposits. You're leveraging your capital, and then you're using the deposits basically to fund the loans. It's a fine line. But the thing is, when you put your money in the bank, putting it in your own bank is just the same as putting it in Wall Street. Just like you're not spending it by depositing it in a Wall Street bank, you're not spending it by depositing it in your own bank. The bank will be basically borrowing from somewhere. They'll borrow from the deposits, but if you, the depositor, need the money, they'll get it from somewhere else, and that's how banking works. That as a bank, you can basically borrow at bankers' rates instead of borrowing at market bond rates. So that's one thing that legislators themselves don't understand what we're talking about, why it's such a good idea, why they can make money at this deal. And I think that's why New Jersey, for example, the governor was quick to jump on it, because he was a Goldman Sachs banker. So he understands banking. So immediately his eyes lit up when he was told of this idea, which was by some of our public banking advocates in New Jersey. He immediately saw the potential, and so he got right on it. So I would say the first problem is people don't understand what we're talking about, and then they'll say it's too risky, or that they'll just not understand the whole subject. So that's the first thing. And then the second thing, of course, is you've got the big banks on pushback. So they've got their lobbyists in there, and they will naturally tell the legislators, you know, we've already got this covered. We know banking. You're better off putting it with us, the experienced bankers. Or people will say, you're going to let government run a bank. Government can't run anything right. But of course, we're not letting government run a bank. The idea would be to hire seasoned bankers who know what they're doing. They're just working for the city or the state. So that's what we need to, first of all, just get understanding out there of how this works, how we're being taken advantage of. Currently, with the big banks, we're kind of under their thumb. They have a monopoly on the whole business of creating money. If we want to get more money into our local communities, we need to be doing that ourselves and be aiming that fire hose of credit at our local economies rather than having it go abroad or wherever Wall Street's aiming it.
You are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM by mobile app and on the web at kexp.org. I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Ellen Brown, founder and chair of the Public Banking Institute. Our topic is the status of efforts to form public banks in the U.S. Would you say a few words about the Public Banking Institute and the resources you provide?
We're a 501c3 nonprofit, so we're just basically an information organization. We have a website with lots of resources on it, lots of information, FAQs, and if you want to find a group in your area that's working on public banking, you can contact us and we'll put you in contact with people. And we do things like, you know, we've done conferences and retreats, and we have monthly calls for interested people where you can ask questions. And then we have another set of monthly calls for the people who are actively pushing legislation, so they kind of talk to each other.
What are the goals of the Public Banking Institute for public bank formation in the next few years?
At our last board retreat, we formed a goal of having 6 publicly owned banks in the nation by 2020. So we'll see if we get there.
You alluded a bit to this earlier, but in your view, which of the current efforts are most likely to be successful first? Where would the next public bank likely be formed, looking both at the state and the city level?
Well, it's actually hard to say, because now that I think about it, that Massachusetts bill is pretty good, too. But it would be California, Washington State, or New Jersey, probably. But maybe Massachusetts.
How receptive are regulators overall to the idea of public banks?
Well, regulators are sort of the issue, because there are so many regulations that really don't apply to a public bank, and we have to sort of squeeze around them. I personally haven't talked to any regulators, so I can't say, but we're assuming that we're going to, when we go to get these charters, we're hoping to be able to write a charter that's a little different from your average bank.
How secure will the money in a public bank be, since there's no FDIC?
If we have to get FDIC insurance, we will, but it's just an extra expense, and it doesn't serve much purpose, because it only covers $250,000. And if it's state like California has $1 trillion, well, yeah, I mean, they're not good. That's not all going to be in the public bank. But anyway, it's going to have a lot more than $250,000 on deposit, hopefully. Yes, a public bank is just as safe. Well, I would actually say more safe. The Bank of North Dakota has never had any problem, and the state itself has done very well, particularly during the crisis. That's when I started looking at it. The North Dakota was the only state that stayed in the black. It had the lowest unemployment rate in the country, the lowest foreclosure rate, and basically you're putting your money in a bank run by seasoned bankers. It's your own bank, so you know where the money's going, and it's protected in the same way that any other bank is protected.
What advantages would public banks have over credit unions and community banks?
What we're talking about here is a bank for the deposits of a city or a state, not individuals. I guess the Bank of North Dakota takes only 1.5% of their deposits are individual deposits. So basically, we're talking about what are we going to do with our state's money or our city's money, and how can we best leverage our own money? How can we best use our own government money, local government money? So you need a place to put that money, and a credit union can't handle that size money, and neither can a community bank. But if you're talking about for people, individuals, they probably are not going to be using this state-owned bank. They will be still using their own community banks, but if it's following the Bank of North Dakota model, then the state-owned bank will be partnering with the local banks to provide liquidity, provide capitalization, to provide help with the regulations. So it's a partner that can step in and allow your local bank to give you a better deal and a bigger loan than they otherwise would. I mean, it probably not for you personally, but if it's a corporate loan, let's say, they can make a bigger loan than they would have been able to otherwise because they have this big partner who will step in with a lot of liquidity.
What are some of the types of projects that public banks would be more likely to fund than private banks?
Well, again, there are different models, and it depends on what model you're going to follow. But ideally, they would start at least with infrastructure and helping local businesses, because that's a place that definitely needs credit. The idea I particularly like for California is we already have an infrastructure bank, but it's not a depository bank. It's a revolving fund. So they have a certain amount of money. They lend it out. It comes back, and they lend it again. If you took that same money and turned it into capital, you could create 10 times that sum in loans. So you're basically making 10 times the profit off your original capital. So the iBank, it's like a banker's bank. You know, it's just some guys sitting in an office. They're not taking in deposits. They don't have tellers, et cetera. But what they could do is just expand the credit that's available for the local economy. And the safest place to put that money to start out, to prove the model, would be to municipal governments, to lend them for those projects that they now have to go to the bond market for. So they're paying much more in the bond market than the deal that we could give them through a state-owned bank. For example, the Bank of North Dakota makes infrastructure loans to local communities for 2%, whereas in the bond market, you might be paying 5% for that same type of loan. Or it depends, you know, now you can pay like 8% or 12% or so for student loans. That's another thing that many people would like the bank to make. But if they do student loans, it needs to be through some, in other words, they wouldn't be dealing directly with students because we're not talking about having the infrastructure to talk to people directly, individually like that. It's more like a banker's bank. Sounds bad. It sounds like helping the banks, but what we're doing is helping the local banks to funnel credit at a lower interest into the local community.
Would you share your thoughts on banking becoming a public utility?
Well, that is our goal, that banking should be a public utility, just like that money is something that flows between people. We all use this medium. It's a medium. It's an exchange between people. And right now, there's sort of a tourniquet on the flow, and the tourniquet is this big private banking monolith that sucks a great deal of the profits out for their own purposes.
Well, what's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
Well, we see public banking as one of our big hopes for escaping the economic problems that we have right now. I know that the mass media will tell you that the economy is doing well and so forth, but they're looking at the economy as the big corporations or the stock market. They're not looking at the plight of ordinary people, many of whom are still unemployed or employed at far less than their capabilities, like minimum wage when they're maybe qualified for something much better. And we think public banking is a way to recover our standing in the community and have a fair deal, basically, for the people.
Well, thanks so much for being here, Ellen.
Thank you, Diane.
You are just listening to Ellen Brown, founder and chair of the Public Banking Institute. For more information, check on the web at publicbankinginstitute.org. Sustainability Segment interviews are available as podcasts along with KEXP's music podcasts. Go to the podcast section of KEXP's website at kexp.org. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in to the Sustainability Segment again next week on listener-powered 90.3 FM by mobile app and at kexp.org.